This week on Talking Tech, we checked in with Mo Rocca, the CBS News humorist, about his new podcast called Mobituaries, where he looks back at amazing lives. And chatting with Mo again, I was inspired to reach into the Talking Tech archives and listen to our great interview with Mo that we did in 2013 at CBS News in New York. I'm Jefferson Graham. Let's have some fun, do a little rewinding, and listen to our chat with Mo Rocca.
You're playing with your iPhone. You're going to show me some stuff on there. I don't even know what it is. You're going to surprise me.
Well, the thing is that hair is my most important accessory, but my iPhone is my second most important accessory. And right now I'm using it as a mirror to make sure that it looks as good as it should.
You're using the mirror app?
Yeah. I should download the mirror app. I'm just using the
reflective screen.
Yeah.
You're using the camera?
Using the camera in reverse. And I have to say it looks really good.
Okay. Yes. I'm done. And of course, what the viewers out there don't know is that hair is so important to you. You saw a piece of hair on my neck and it bothered you so much you tore it off.
I plucked it, yes.
Yes, and it felt not so good.
Really? But was it not so good or was it pleasure pain?
I'd go for not so good. And okay. A surprise. And we're going to finish this by tearing your beard off.
But okay, yes. Okay, all right.
Tech in your life. You're a correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning.
Yes.
You have two cooking shows.
Yes, one currently, yes.
Okay, on the website they have you down for two.
Okay,
so sure. I guess it needs to be, is it the ravioli or the grandmother?
Well, they're the same. Oh. It's my grandmother's ravioli. We're a heartwarming and hilarious series where I learned to cook from grandmothers and grandfathers across the country in their kitchens.
And you reach out to grandmothers out in the USA or wherever on the website to come on in and give us your stories.
Yes, we reach out to people who want to volunteer grandparents in their lives. It's a tricky thing because we don't want people who desperately want to be on TV, because it's a funny thing. People who don't really want to be on TV are generally better at being on TV than people for whom being on TV fills some sort of need, some sort of hole in their lives. That would be me.
Yeah.
And so they are generally not, and maybe a generational thing, generally not so great with this. So it's their kids and their grandkids. We're getting on this and mm-hmm. saying Nana has to be on that show, or you know, Grandpa has to be on that show.
Okay. What about Sunday Morning? I know you're very active. Twitter. Watch this segment. I'm going to do this segment. Do you find stories on Twitter?
I do. In fact, one story I did recently really sort of originated on Twitter. Let me rephrase that, if I can, because this will be edited,
fine.
Right?
Yes.
I do use Twitter to find stories. In fact, one idea I had that was really only just a glimmer of an idea kind of came to fruition and via Twitter, which is that there was an editor here at CBS News, a very attractive woman. She is probably about 5'10" tall. Her name is Shilpi. And one day we were talking about a mutual friend of ours who is a woman who is much shorter, and Shilpi said about that woman, "We've had some tension." And I said, "Why?" And she said, "Because I've told her to stop dating tall guys." And I said, "Are you kidding?" And she said, "No, she needs to stop dating tall guys. It really is annoying." And I went home. I didn't need to go home to do it. I think on the way home mm-hmm. in the cab, I started tweeting about this. And I had an avalanche of responses from women, short and tall, who had extremely strong opinions about this. And I thought, this is the kind of, well, it's a kind of great story you get to do for something like Sunday Morning, where you're not having to be hooked into current events all the time. And you can just do something about human nature, something that may always be an issue. But it was validated. But it was validated by the response on Twitter that there were plenty of women who had really strong opinions about
this. So what was this tweet? Do you remember what you said?
I think I said, gosh, I could probably find it, although I don't know how to search for my tweets.
I could probably find it by looking at all your tweets, but paraphrase.
Don't do it. I think what I said was, my friend Shilpi is tall, upset at shorter women for taking tall guys off the market, something like that. Fair? ?
Yeah.
Something like that. And just the responses were so impassioned and funny.
Yeah.
But
so you made arrangements through there to interview tall women.
And then, in fact, yeah. when, and this was months before Valentine's Day, immediately the producer that I approached about this, we said, this is a perfect Valentine's Day story, the predicament that tall women face. And so then much later, and I told him, I said, look, let's pull up some of those tweets that came in right away. And frankly, I don't want to reveal all my, I don't want to draw more attention to it than might be good for my job, but I didn't want to go onto Twitter again and say, we're going to do a story about this because we have competitors. And so we went back to the original tweets, let's just say that, and found the people that cared enough to respond right away. And from those, we found several of the people that ended up in the piece.
Okay. And you have an interesting beat here. It's not world news. It's not politics. It's not local. Define it. What exactly do you do for Sunday morning?
My job at Sunday morning is like going back to college and taking only electives, which is pretty great. I was the kid who didn't like the big box of cereal. I liked the variety pack. Mm-hmm. And so I get to go from, you know, a piece about the assassination of James, I get to go from a piece about the assassination of James Garfield 1 week to a profile of Susan Lucci the next, to the role of popcorn in saving movie theaters during the Depression, to early onset Alzheimer's in Colombia, a family that has a genetic mutation that guarantees it. So it's great. I get to tell stories that are interesting to me. I don't have to tell stories that are not interesting to me. And you know, I get to participate in stories to the extent that my participation helps a story. That's always a tricky line because I don't want to step all over the story and say, look at me. But, you know, there's something very, in my opinion, performative about any kind of reporting because you're telling a story.
Right. So in doing some of the more offbeat stuff, I would think that you would be researching by going to some wacky, offbeat websites. And
absolutely. I'm afraid I'm probably not being as creative as I could be in the way that I use technology. I mean, I'll frankly, you know, the first stop is Google. For, you know, articles about whatever subject I'm doing, I just went to do a story in Egypt about art repatriation, the effort by certain countries to get art back from overseas museums. And so there have been plenty of articles about it over the last few years. Twitter is the one that I use most of all to see if certain ideas, if certain lines really land with people. The danger of it is that crowdsourcing ideas may mean that you end up going to ideas that people are already comfortable with and familiar with. And it may inadvertently inhibit you from reaching out and finding an idea that people never thought they'd be interested in, but end up being interested in. I think that's the danger also with trying to sharpen or hone a comedic voice through Twitter. If I were in my 20s now, I'd be leery of using it because, you know, you have to go through a lot of unfunny jokes before you get to a funny joke. And putting stuff out there that's not quite working and getting a lot of negative feedback might only inhibit you and make you gun shy.
Okay, now on your Twitter, you have an interesting new country, Mo Rocca, right? You got a map of Mo Rocca, which is actually the real Mo Rocca, right?
Yeah. That's right, yeah. Well, I know the capital of every country in the world.
Do you?
So I'm really into, world capitals. And the fact that my name sounds almost like a Northwest African country, but really more like a percussive instrument. That's a maraca.
But, right. So what's the capital of Algiers?
Well, Algiers is the capital of Algeria.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Okay. And France, what's the capital?
Paris.
Okay. I guess this is easy stuff. And you could look up anything, right?
Sure.
Right.
That's true.
Yeah, now you can.
Well, you know, actually, this is a name drop, but it's, boy, what a great name to drop. I was doing a piece with Nora Ephron and her sister Delia about a play they wrote off Broadway, and we were trying to remember something, a movie that somebody had been in. And I immediately reached for this, and she looked at it, and she said, "Boy, that's a bummer." And I said, "What?" And she said, "You know, gone are the days, that wonderful period of, who was that actor? Who was that actor? That thing that right. oftentimes when you got together with people at dinner, you'd spend 20 minutes going, oh, you know, he was the one in the Western, Gary Cooper was in it.
Right.
That's gone, that period. Now you just go, okay, I know these three things, and then, oh, you know, it's Alan Ladd or whatever. And,
yeah.
But that period of, you know, that thing, you know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what
that's
you're talking
gone.
About. Yeah, but, and it is. Now, Egypt.
But you're like, who cares?
Okay, fine. No, it's fine. What else did you bring with you to Egypt besides your iPhone? And how did you handle calling
And notice
calling
that I'm putting
home?
It between my legs, by the yes. way, which not to be, I know this is a family paper and presumably a family web-based show.
Yeah, right, yes.
Okay, but I feel like it's like a baby. Like I was going through security and I put the iPhone in the little round thing that looks like a dog food bowl,
right.
you know?
Yeah.
And I put it through and then the man in front of me picked it up, obviously mistakenly, and I was so offended. But worse, I was more offended when I said, "That's mine." He just went, "Oh," and handed it to me like that. And I thought, that was as if you picked up my child. And right now what you should be doing is going, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry that I touched your iPhone, that I accidentally took it away." So I'm obviously I'm placing, like a lot of people, way too much importance on it, but it really bothered me that he accidentally took it and wasn't more apologetic. Okay, now you're asking me what else I took. I took a Kindle to Egypt,
mm-hmm.
and I read about the Mexican-American War on my Kindle.
On the plane?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I took some earbuds. I took my laptop, and I took a snowball mic, because I had to voice over my Rita Moreno profile from Cairo.
Blue microphones, snowball. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And
that's I have one on my desk as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
I do not have an iPad. I've been told I should get one. But to me, the idea of having a MacBook, an iPhone, and an iPad, it just feels very dispersed. I don't.
So you don't have the iPad too much, but you travel with a...
I don't have an iPad at all.
Laptop, microphone, iPhone, and a Kindle.
Yes. And I don't love traveling with all that stuff. I always take the snowball mic. Even though I don't have to take the snowball mic out and put it in a separate bin, I do because people always think it might be a bomb. But it looks like the kind of bomb that Wile E. Coyote would use against the Roadrunner. It's so absurd. When people go, "Take that thing out," I think, you really think that I'm going to try to hurt people, you know, using something that looks so cartoonish, like it was made by Acme.
Yeah.
But anyway, I do that.
Okay,
and then usually TSA agents go, "Man, that's really cool looking."
So they've actually stopped you many times. And
whenever they say that, so I'd learned now to take it out and put it in a separate bin, even though officially I don't have to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you travel with the snowball all the time?
No. I travel, but you know, you never know when a Rita Moreno piece needs to be retracked.
Right. So, yeah. And do you bring a microphone of any other kind? I mean, couldn't you record into one of the sound guys' recorders over there?
I guess you could, but... it's not always guaranteed. It's much easier if you're in a hotel room and you get under the covers, under a duvet.
Yeah.
Comforter. Depends where I'm staying. Sometimes we can afford a duvet.
And how do you record your audio? What do you record it on? Is it GarageBand?
Audacity.
Audacity.
Yeah. Audacity.
Okay. And do you
and I get under a comforter, and then I make a little fort with pillows. I need as much sound insulation as possible.
And you're being serious?
I'm being quite serious, yeah. I mean, I always am ashamed when I do it from home because it's too echoey, and then I realize my apartment is underfurnished, and it is.
Okay, describe again. Three pillows?
What I'll do is I'll take the laptop with the script on the screen under the bed with the snowball mic attached to it. I get under a duvet as if I'm in a grotto, in a cave. And then I'll also have pillows inside forming a little fort. And then, but I have to make sure that I don't move too much because then it'll rustle. The sheets will rustle and that will make its own sound. Like that we're on, like it'll sound like there's wind, that I'm on a beach somewhere. And then that deadens the sound.
Okay, now you know we need B-roll for this. So do you have a shot? We want to illustrate it.
I should do that so the producers understand what I go through.
Because I just have it on my desk, and it seems to be fine.
Is that true?
Yeah, it's just on my desk.
I don't know. They always tell me it's too echoey or that I'm popping or whatever. So I hope my hair's looking okay.
No, I think it looks great.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, and maybe we'll just finish. I'll just yank stuff. What about apps? You probably have some really fun apps.
I don't actually. I'm sorry. I have very, because I'm so concerned about wearing the battery out. I'm a compulsive app closer. You know about that? You know, where you double click and then you go like, and then you do that and there's a little minus sign, then you I'm constantly closing apps. I've taught all my friends to do that. I mean, it's because I'm not an early adopter, and this is the one thing I know I can impress them with, is they'll say, it's battery, man. I hate the battery on this iPhone. I'll say, well, did you close your apps? What are you talking about? And then I'll double click and see that they have 35 apps open. I have CBS News. I have Wikipedia. This is really boring. I have podcasts, YouTube, and Politico. And then I have the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. And then I have Words with Friends. And I have Park Now, so that when I visit my mother in Bethesda, Maryland, that I can use this to park. But I wanted her to be really impressed. She's Colombian, and she rightly said, "Ay, it's taking so long. Ay, why don't we just put money in the meter?" And she was right, that it actually is kind of faster.
What does Park Now let you do?
It makes you put in a thing and you say, "I'm here."
Yeah.
And then I think like a drone flies overhead to confirm that
you're. Right. But if you put in a quarter, it's just much faster.
Yeah, it kind of is.
I'm Jefferson Graham with USA Today. You've been listening to Talking Tech. That was our 2013 interview with Mo Rocca. Check out his new podcast, Mobituaries, which is available wherever you find great online audio, just like Talking Tech. Please subscribe to us. Please favorite the show on Stitcher, which helps more people find the show. And as always, thanks everyone for listening.